Magandang umaga and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, EJ David, joining you from Digayacuk, the lands of the Dena'ina. Today is Valentine's Day, and although we are talking about love, we are not talking about that kind of love. Instead, we are talking love for basketball. So if you're a basketball lover, if you love hoops, then today's show is for you. And if you love Alaska, and you're all about bringing honor and recognition and pride to our home state, then today's show is for you too. This is because today we talk about a basketball program that has brought countless honors, awards, and recognition to Alaska. The University of Alaska Anchorage Women's Basketball Program is elite. Conference champions, Sweet 16 appearances, perennial national championship contender, and of course, mayhem. What makes them so successful? What is their culture and identity? How much attention are they getting locally and nationally? Should they be getting more attention and support given their success? And what does the future hold for UAA basketball? Stay with us for the next hour as we discuss these questions and more with our esteemed guests. And there are three of them this morning. Our first guest is UAA Women's Basketball Head Coach Ryan McCarthy, who was born in Anchorage and is the winningest active coach in NCAA Division II, making him one of the brightest coaching talents in the entire NCAA. Coach McCarthy has taken the UAA Women's Hoops program to unprecedented heights in 10 seasons, producing almost 250 wins or around there, and just around 40 losses, if even. He has won the GNAC, Great Northwest Athletic Conference, and NCAA West Region Coach of the Year Award many times. Coach McCarthy graduated from Northwest Nazarene University in 2006 with a bachelor's degree in social science education and is the proud father of two children. He and his wife, also a former collegiate star at Florida Gulf Coast University, were married in 2019. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Also with us this morning is Tanae Voliva, who is a senior forward slash center and one of the leaders of the UAA women's basketball team. She is the team's one of the team's top rebounder and shot blocker, and lately has been racking up big offensive numbers as well. She just had a 2010 double-double against in-state rival UAF a few days ago. Tanae is a homegrown local talent playing for East High School, where she scored more than 1,000 career points in four varsity seasons. She was named in the second-team All-State team as a junior and senior. Tanae was an honor roll student at East and continues to be an excellent student at UAA, where she is currently getting her master's degree in clinical psychology. Good morning, Tanae.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Our third guest is Lauren Johnson, who is a senior guard for the UAA women's basketball team. Lauren is from Minnesota, where she was a team captain for her high school team. And after high school, she played for North Dakota State College of Science, a nationally ranked junior college squad. She translated her success there over to UAA, where she is now one of the team leaders. Here at UAA, Lauren is a nursing major. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And to our listeners, you can join the conversation too. Are you a basketball fan? Have you seen the UAA women's basketball team play? What do you think? Do you know a young woman who have college basketball dreams or beyond? Do you think Alaska basketball players are underrated? Please share your thoughts and experiences by calling us at 1-888-353-5752. Or if you're in Anchorage, call us at 907-550-8433. You can also reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, let's begin. And I want to start off by just getting to know our guests a little bit better. Coach McCarthy, let's start with you. A lot of people may have heard of your success as a coach, but many may not know very much about your life before that, especially the fact that you were born in Anchorage. Can you tell us a little bit more about your history growing up and how you got into hoops?
Yeah, I was born here in Anchorage. In fact, it's kind of weird that I work across the street from the building that I was born in. but I grew up, my dad worked at Tote downtown, and we lived out in Chugiak growing up. And so when I was about 13, we moved to a little town in Oregon called Prineville, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And basketball was always a really big part of my life here in Alaska. Just, you know, we had really good youth programs at the time in the YMCA mm-hmm. and the CYSA out in Chugiak. And, you know, I grew up going to the shootout and watching the Seawolves play. And so that was kind of always a dream of mine growing up, was to be able to go play for UAA. And when I went to Oregon, things kind of changed, and the youth basketball system wasn't as organized, and especially in the rural area that I was. And my parents split up, and so I lived with my dad. We had a one-bedroom apartment on top of a barn in Prineville, Oregon. So he kind of pulled me aside and told me that, you know, if I ever wanted to go to college, that it would have to be something where I got a scholarship. And that's when I kind of made a decision to really dedicate myself to be the best that I could at basketball, because it was a passion of mine. So I, you know, played high school basketball in Oregon, and then got a scholarship to Northwest Nazarene, because that was the place that they had won a lot. Mm-hmm. And they were in UAA's league, and UAA didn't recruit me. So it gave me an opportunity to I guess my, part of me is a little petty on that. So I it helped motivate me there, and I got to play 4 years. And during my career in high school, the 2 years that my high school had ever made state in the history of the program was my junior and senior year. And then when I went to college, I played for, I guess I had the misfortune or fortune, however you look at it, was to play for a different coach every single year in college. So I played for four different coaches. And then I ended up getting picked up in it was called the International Basketball League. It was a minor league here in the United States. And then that kind of led me to a professional career in Europe for a little while. And when I was over there, I kind of had, I think, what every young person goes through, where I knew I didn't want to be, in my mid-30s, broken down and not have a job resume just as a basketball player. So I emailed my grandpa and asked him if I could start working at a car dealership when I was done. And he told me to be a coach. He said, "Ryan, you know nothing about cars. You need to coach basketball." So the next day I went into the president of the club that I played for and asked him if I could coach the amateur team for free. And I did. And that team had won two games the year before. It was kind of a mess. And the year I took over, we won their version of the national championship. So it was kind of a college-aged men's team. And so that's kind of when I started to really pursue a career in basketball, which led me to the path that I'm now.
Great. Thank you so much, Coach. You brought up a lot of things there that I want to go back to later. You know, your experience as a basketball player, both in college and pro, and then your start with coaching a little bit. I want to go back there a little bit later. But I want to move over to Tanae real quick, and I just want to hear a little bit about her journey too. So similar to Coach McCarthy, Tanae, can you tell us a bit about your experiences growing up here in Anchorage and what got you into basketball?
Yeah, so like you said earlier, I was born and raised in Anchorage. I grew up pretty much on the east side my whole life. I started playing basketball maybe like second or third grade, really just because my older brother was playing and I kind of just wanted to be like him. He played for the Mountaineers and Coach Rick, which was a big comp team at the time back then. So I just wanted to follow in his footsteps. I started getting into the YMCA and Boys and Girls Club leagues. It probably wasn't until like eighth or ninth grade that I realized I wanted to go to college. And I went to East, where I also played for Coach Rick there. And I had a pretty good high school career, you know, but I never won a state championship. So that was kind of tough for me. We had a lot of talent at the time, but we just could never get it done. So, and then going into my senior year, I remember just walking into the gym one day and I was kind of emotional and panicking because I didn't have any offers or any scholarships, anything like that. And, you know, Coach Rick just told me to wait it out. You know, it would come. And I ended up signing to junior college in Wisconsin, which I just didn't really feel like was the right choice for me in my heart. So I ended up making the decision not to go. And then I actually got a call from Coach McCarthy, and he wanted me to come over for a visit. So I met the team and really just sat down with the coaches. And, you know, he told me they were going to hold me to a high standard if I came here. And I would be a champion if I did decide to come here. So that's what kind of sold me there.
Wow. All right. So you mentioned the Mountaineers with Coach Rick. Was that the comp team that you played for, too, when you were young?
Yeah. Okay. There was a boys and a girls side. So we were pretty good back then, too. And then right before, I mean, I was going to East High School anyway because I lived on the east side. But Coach Rick ended up getting the job at East. So that was kind of the perfect fit for me. He was like another father figure in my life. So I was really close with him.
That's good to hear. Yeah, so we might talk a little bit more about youth basketball later as well here locally. Thank you. Thank you for sharing a little bit about your experiences growing up, Tanae. Lauren, same question with you. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences growing up and what got you into basketball? Is Lauren on the line? All right, it looks like we may have lost Lauren. But anyway, so I want to go back to Coach McCarthy real quick. So Coach McCarthy, you said, you know, you were a basketball player at Northwest Nazarene. A lot of people may not know this, but you know, you're one of the top 3-point shooters in Northwest Nazarene University basketball history. That's something. You know, so you've always enjoyed offense, I guess. And you also mentioned that you grew up in a barn in Oregon. You know, as you were talking about that, it gave me like visions of like Larry Bird, you know, shooting hoops outside of a barn in French Lick, Indiana. Is that pretty much your story too, and how you became such a great shooter?
You know, a little bit. We couldn't afford a basketball hoop, so I'd ride my bike into town, and I don't know. The janitor probably knows by now. But I would stick like candy wrappers inside the doors, and you know, I'd hide a paperclip in the gym, and so I could raise and lower the hoops and turn a light on, and so it was a lot of that until my senior year. They just ended up giving my dad a key to the gym, so it wasn't me breaking in anymore. But yeah, I got kind of addicted to it. You know, I think we talk a lot about in our program, you know, there's people that are committed. People that are convicted and people that are obsessed, and you don't really want to go to the obsessed part, and that's kind of where I was. But I think I was always a pretty good shooter, but I through my career, I had 6 knee surgeries on my left knee. And so each time, you know, I received, you know, got the game taken from me and had a little bit of a physical setback, it, you know, I had to add certain things to my game. Because I wasn't as explosive, or, you know, I'd come back and it, you know, something would be a little bit different with me physically. So, you know, by the time I got to college, you know, my senior year, I think I hit 260 something threes in my career. And my senior year, I hit over 100. And that's when I really kind of, you know, going into my senior year, I had a really elite summer, and, you know, just played as much as I could and shot as much as I could in college anyway. So that's kind of how, you know, that I think that work ethic started in high school, but it definitely, you know, grew as I got older.
Wow. See, that's I think important for a lot of people to hear, especially kids to hear, like how you were literally breaking into the gym to play basketball. I mean, that's how much. You know, I know you joked about it, calling yourself obsessed with the game, but, you know, but I think that's the kind of love and dedication to the game that you know, I think a lot more people need to hear about. That's awesome. That's like out of the movies kind of thing, you know? So anyway, it looks like Lauren is back on the line now. Lauren, are you with us? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, so Lauren, before we got cut off there, I was just asking, you know, Coach McCarthy and also Tanae So just share a little bit about themselves, their experiences growing up, and also what got them into basketball. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your journey?
Super girly. So I never really did much sports when I was younger. My mom one day asked me, you know, hey, a colleague of mine, he's coaching basketball. Do you want to go to practice tonight? And I said, yes. I was so excited. I had, like, painted my nails. I had, like, put on this, like, velvet-like suit. And I went to practice, and I was so hot. But it was so much fun. I had never did anything like that. I just told my mom, like, yeah, like, I want to join the team. Joined the team, played all throughout middle school, all throughout high school. In high school, I wasn't quite sure if I was going to play college basketball just because the offers that I was getting were, a lot of them were in-state. I grew up in Minneapolis. But then my coach, she had kind of told me about, like, what a JUCO was. And I had kind of, was like, you know, like, I kind of was interested. And so went to a JUCO, played there. We ended up going to nationals my freshman year. I got a few offers out of my freshman year, but still nothing quite fit. Stayed another year. That's when Coach McCarthy, he had reached out to me. I definitely liked the program. I liked what he said. He was a defensive-minded coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just kind of clicked, you know, off rip. I definitely wanted to go to another winning program. They had a beautiful facility. I just kind of clicked then. I just kind of been playing ever since.
Great. Thank you for sharing a little bit of that. You brought up a lot of things, you know, like the facility and, you know, and a winning program at UAA. We'll get back to all of those things later. You know, I really want to ask all of you about what you think about the success at UAA and the facility and, you know, that we have over here. You know, but it's interesting how you say that you didn't really see yourself as, you know, an athlete in the beginning, right? You just decided to try it out, and, you know, and then you enjoyed it, and you loved it. You know, I want to go back to Tanae a little bit here. Tanae, what about you? Did you always see yourself, you know, as an athlete? Were you always good at basketball? I mean, what was this? Was there a struggle in the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I was also pretty big on softball, too.
Okay.
So I think around 8th or 9th grade, when I started to take basketball a little bit more seriously, I kind of decided to make a decision between the two.
Mm.
I played for Nunaka Valley growing up here, like on the east side, and
yeah.
It was a really successful softball program. One of the summers I didn't travel, they actually made it to the World Series game. So I definitely love softball, too, but I think I just knew in my heart basketball is what I wanted to stick to. It really pushed me.
Uh-huh.
I think as a leader as well, so that
yeah.
was my choice, and I'm stuck with it.
Cool. Yeah. So that's the other thing there, the Nunaka Valley softball team. That's tradition too, right there. Tradition of
yeah.
success and winning. Maybe we should do a show on that one of these days. That's an awesome community story right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. So real quick, you know, Coach, you mentioned earlier that you played, you know, for good or bad, you played for 4 different coaches in college, in 4 years of college. How was that? Did that help you? You think that helped you to become a good coach? Did you learn different styles, different philosophies? Also, coaching for free? Can you say a little
yeah.
bit about those things?
Yeah. I guess, you know, in college, the coach that recruited me, There was two guys that were there, and it was one of the main reasons that I went to Northwest Nazarene, or that I ended up, you know, getting the deal closed with them. You know, the head coach at the time was a really, you know, he was a winner. They had played for a national championship and a couple Final Fours, and the assistant coach was, I don't know, him and I just hit it off. He was originally from Pasadena, California. His name was Julius Coleman, and he and I got really close. He kind of took me under his wing a little bit and, you know, made sure that, you know, some of the guys on the team, you know, looked after me. And so that year I was the only freshman on the team. So it was just really comforting to have him there. And so when they left, it kind of shook me a little bit. And they ended up bringing in a legend from the program that had been retired, and that he came out of retirement. And he was more kind of like a Bobby Knight kind of real disciplinarian.
Throwing chairs onto the court kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. No, he came in and karate kicked a water thing one time. And he was really intense, you know, and it toughened me up. You know, I was at the time I wasn't wild about it. But, you know, looking back, that's probably when I made my biggest growth, just in terms of being able to have tough skin and like to learn to handle the truth. You know, he did not sugarcoat anything. And I just was really thankful for that particular coach, and of the four, he was one that I was really thankful for. And then the third coach that we had, he's actually in the NBA right now for the Washington Wizards. And he was really good at bringing in talent. He was a little bit different. There wasn't like a personal relationship with him. But he was all about like competition, and you know, if you were going to play, you needed to earn your spot and that kind of stuff. And that kind of gave me that perspective. And then my last coach, was the easiest. It was probably, you know, if you just talk about fun, we had the most fun. We didn't win the most, but we definitely had the most fun. And it was frustrating at times because there wasn't the success that met our expectations. But the thing that I appreciated about that coach was I knew he loved me. You know, he'd always bring us in the office, and he cared about us as, like, men, you know. Okay. And that meant a lot to me when I thought, if I ever get a program, I've had totally different coaches, and I want it to be competitive. I want to tell the truth, and I want it to be where, you know, the people know, like, that there's a relationship outside of the lines, like, that I care about them. And so... That's kind of what I've tried to mold my career after, to take those characteristics from those coaches. And, you know, when I coached for free, I made decent money playing hoops. So I, you know, doing it for free wasn't a big deal. I was in the gym anyways. And, you know, instead of going home and watching Back to the Future again for the 80th time, I could coach some hoops. So.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. That's beautiful how you learn from all your coaches and try to integrate what you loved about them into how you approach coaching now. That's awesome. And also, it does sound like your last year was fun. I mean, that's when you made over 100 threes, right? So I guess that'll make everything fun. But anyway, we have to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we will talk more specifically about the culture and identity of UAA women's basketball. But right now, we are going to take a quick break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David speaking with UAA women's basketball coach Ryan McCarthy, Tenevo Oliva, and Lauren Johnson. We are, you know, talking about Alaska basketball. And so if you have thoughts about the local basketball scene, hit us up by calling 1-888-353-5752 or 907-550-8433. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David speaking with members of the UAA Women's Basketball Program. You can join our conversation too by calling 1-888-353-5752 or 907-550-8433 or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's start off with Lauren for this segment. Lauren, you are from Minnesota. You're not from Alaska, but you decided to come and join the UAA women's basketball program. Can you tell us briefly about what attracted you about this program? Like, why? Why UAA?
Well, definitely when my assistant coach first hit me up about UAA, she was like, they have this beautiful facility, and they have a winning record. So that right there, I'm actually kind of like, I was like, maybe this is a place I can see myself at. And just when Coach McCarthy talked to me about the program, he was just saying, you know, we're like a family here. It is a lot of hard work, but it is very rewarding. So I just felt like, you know, me, I just need to be the best version of myself. And I feel like I could do that. Yay.
Great. So family, huh? There's something there. We'll get back to that here in a minute. But what about Tanae? I know you're local. You've probably known about UAA your entire life. And you said you kind of thought about going to another school in the beginning, but then you ended up at UAA. So what is it about UAA that attracted you the most, Tanae?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think I realized as a player here in Alaska how much of like a powerhouse program was in my backyard, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of players out of state realize that either, the experience they can get here. So like I said on my visit, you know, I really started to realize what it was about and the family culture and mm-hmm. just meeting so many girls from out of state that all had the same goals as I did. You know, for the Alaskan kids, it's kind of easy for us to take pride because we're from here and we want to represent our home state. Mm-hmm. But for the out of state kids like Lauren, you know, they give up their family back home and they travel here to live in the dark, in the cold, just to be a part of like a winning culture. So mm-hmm. I think we all just have the same goals in mind, you know, and like she said, we really are a family and we're mm-hmm. a very diverse team and you just learn so much from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So winning culture, family atmosphere, right? Tanae, you said, you know, it's such a high level program right here in Alaska. And, you know, and you have people from all over the country now who are part of your team, right? We have Lauren here with us this morning from Minnesota, but you had players from all over the country, Hawaii, California, everywhere. So it's attracting a lot of attention. So, Coach, I want to pivot over to you. You know, what makes UAA women's basketball so successful in your mind?
I think it starts with the players. You know, I don't think, you know, we're not in the position we're in at this point in time if we didn't get, you know, good student athletes that, you know, are committed on, you know, in and outside the lines of the court. And we've had a lot of really good student athletes come through here. So I think it goes with them. I think, you know, I've been really lucky to have the same assistant for, I guess this would be the 11th year that we've worked together. And mm-hmm. so, you know, Coach Afoa has always been a real good balance for mm-hmm. me and has been a really good kind of stabilization there just to show continuity in the program. And then, you know, we have really high expectations and we're asking our ladies to do things that a lot of other programs aren't. I think people think they know what hard work is, but then when they get here, it's a whole different level. and I don't say that disrespectfully to any other program, but there's a reason we've been able to sustain the success. It's because, you know, we're asking these ladies to give up a lot of their social life and mm-hmm. to step outside their comfort zone and learn the value of leadership and learn the value of what it really means to be committed mm-hmm. to being the best, because only one team can be a champion.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful. When I first heard of UAA women's basketball, and eventually became a fan, the biggest attraction to me was this thing called mayhem. And, you know, this has been getting the attention of a lot of people, even national news outlets. Newsweek did a feature on this a few years ago, mayhem. calling the UAA women's basketball team the best team west of UConn and also of the UConn. But anyways, Coach, let's start with you. You know, what is this mayhem thing, this full-court press, amoeba-style half-court defense that has been branded to UAA?
Yeah, X's and O's wise, this is basically a matchup 2-2-1 full-court press, and it falls back into a 1-1-3 matchup zone, which was developed back in like the 80s at Pittsburgh, and then became famous at UNLV during the early 90s. So we kind of brought back this fossil called the amoeba defense that was branded as something that you were not supposed to do all game long. So the guy that really made it famous was a coach named Jerry Tarkanian, and he coached at UNLV on the men's side. They won a national championship, had four first-round draft picks. And nobody really ran it since consistently at a high level because I think everybody wrote it off as you could play any kind of defense you want if you have four first-round draft picks.
That's right, if you have athletes.
So we put it in, you know, I used to be man-to-man, you know, old school, you know, denial, everything, pressure defense. And there were, you know, outside of Tarkanian, there was this guy at Virginia Commonwealth named Shaka Smart. And he branded his defense, and it took off. He was one of the most, you know, popular coaches in the country. His program was really, really fun to watch. His players bought into it. And I felt like if we branded our system, we could not only recruit to that system, but it could create some excitement in women's basketball that I felt was lacking on the women's side. You know, I always felt when I got involved in the women's game that there was really good basketball that I felt was being underappreciated just from a spectator standpoint. And so I thought, man, if we can play this exciting style and we brand it, you know, I think it'll bring the fans. I think it will be fun to play in, so it'll be easy to recruit or easier to recruit. And I feel like if we can recruit to that system, we can sustain success. And that's, to me, that is the hardest thing. It's much easier to turn around a program than to sustain success.
You
become the standard, right? Like
That's right.
You don't measure yourself against anyone but yourself. So that's kind of, you know, how it became, you know, mayhem. In my wildest dreams, I would have never thought that this was going to be the case, and it get to this level. But like I said before, it starts with the players. And then it works its way up to, you know, the coaches and leadership.
If you want to learn more about this mayhem style of defense, there's a best-selling basketball DVD where Coach Ryan McCarthy explains some of his secrets, not all of them, I guess, but some of his secrets. So you can go find that on Google if you're really interested in learning more about mayhem and this amoeba-style half-court defense. But to me, it sounds really complicated. I mean, amoeba, you know, to me, when I think about amoeba, you know, it adjusts, right? It adjusts, it evolves depending on, you know, what's happening out there on the court. So to me, it sounds really, really complicated and confusing. And so I want to go to the players. I want to start with Tanae this time. You know, Tanae, I mean, was this hard to learn?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had no clue what I was really getting into when I came here. And, you know, I was playing limited minutes at first, so I really did have some time, like, to kind of just watch and practice and just kind of learn the rotations and stuff like that. But it does take a year or two, I think, within the program to get a really good understanding of it. But I think, you know, as much as the X's and O's and the rotations are important, I think just going out there and playing hard, you know, I think our system allows us to make mistakes, but if you're going 100%, you know, you can make up for it. And as long as you have good communication and, you know, you're playing for each other, it works out. So it's definitely a fun style to play.
Lauren, what about you? What are your thoughts about learning this defense, this style of playing? Was it hard at first? Did we lose Lauren again? I think we may have lost her. It's all right. That's fine. But yeah, so this is, you know, to me, it sounds really complicated, the defense. But I like what you said there, Tanae, about, you know, that, yeah, even if you do make mistakes, as long as, you know, you're going 100%, you know, going all out, you can kind of make up for those mistakes that happen on the court. And so that's the other thing that I think Coach McCarthy mentioned earlier about, you know, hard work, right? I mean, it sounds to me that you all go really hard at it, you know, on practice and in games. So how was that, Tanae? I mean, does that ring true to you when you first came into UAA about how hard you all go?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as much as we love to compete against other teams, I think we're all just natural competitors, and we do go at each other in practice, and it makes us all better, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we face our best competition in practice every day. So when we do get to play other teams, you know, it's just all of us against them. And I think our depth is what makes us so special. You know, we don't really have just one or two players that we rely on. You know, we have mm-hmm. our starting group, and then we like to say we have another starting group coming That's in right. to reinforce the first five. So,
yeah. Yeah, you know, to be honest, many times over the years while watching you all play, and the substitutions happen. Sometimes I get reminded of hockey sometimes in terms of the substitutions that happen, because it's like the whole unit will be subbed out and the whole new unit comes in sometimes. So, but yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool to watch y'all play. But you said something there, Tanae, about, you know, about playing together also, you know, on offense. You alluded to that a little bit, you know, because I think, you know, the defense gets a lot of the attention, you know, the mayhem and amoeba. But, you know, there's another important part of your program's identity and culture too, you know, but it's on the offensive side of things. And to me, you know, just an outside observer and not really knowing a whole lot about it, but you know, to me, it stands out to me that, you know, that there's usually not, you know, a single player on the team, you know, that stands out offensively. You know, nobody is averaging, you know, 20-plus points a game or anything like that. But yet, you all have been able to sustain this high level of success, you know, for, you know, going on 10 years now. So can you all talk a little bit about that too? You know, your philosophy and identity on the offensive end? Coach, let's start with you.
Yeah, you know, we, as much as pressure is, you know, our press and the amoeba defense puts on other teams, we want to do the same thing offensively. So we always want to dictate the tempo of the game. So we like to play fast. You know, mm-hmm. we play a fast break style. We really focus on, like, you know, our spacing and sprinting the floor and the difference between running and sprinting. talk about, you know, in the half court, in our execution, we run a motion-based offense, which gives everyone pretty much equal opportunity as long as you're in good spacing. And, you know, depending on the scouting report of other teams, we may have an emphasis that we're looking, you know, we may say, okay, we think this is a weakness of this particular defense and we're going to attack it this way, but it's motion-based. So, mm-hmm. You know, I tell each player, make sure that you come into this game with a scorer's mentality. You know, everybody should be having a mindset that they're going to score 20 points this game, and it makes us really hard to guard as a team. And mm-hmm. on top of all that, they have to remember about 50 set plays that we could call it any time. So there's a lot going on offensively.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah. But I think it looks like we have Lauren back on again. So maybe I can go ask Lauren now. So Coach McCarthy was just talking about how you all had to go hard and learn this complicated defense and also, you know, 11 set plays that they can call at any time. So Lauren, just speak a little bit about your experiences going to UAA and having to, you know, learn how to work really hard and then also learning this complicated style of play, you know, with the mayhem and amoeba. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences there?
When I first got here, it's still hard depending on what action the other team is running. But yeah, I was not expecting it to be as hard as it was. he told me, too, that, you know, he runs this defense called Amoeba. It's kind of like a matchup zone. And I was like, oh, I've ran plenty of matchup zones. So I was like, I'm fine. When I got here, I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, I don't think I'm going to be able to get this. But just for, like, practice and just talking, like, talking's a huge part of the defense. I eventually got it. You know, sometimes I still get tripped up. But, you know, after, I would say after a year, I got it.
Just after a year. Thank you. Thank you for your, you know, candid thoughts there. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, right now we have to take another break. But when we come back, we will talk about the future of UAA basketball. Again, this is EJ David speaking with UAA women's basketball head coach Ryan McCarthy and a couple of UAA women's basketball players, Tanae Voliva and Lauren Johnson. If you have thoughts about Alaska basketball, please give us a call at 1-888-353-5752 or 550-8433. You can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is EJ David speaking with members of the UAA Women's Basketball Program, Coach Ryan McCarthy, Senior Center Tanae Voliva, and Senior Guard Lauren Johnson. You can call us at 1-888-353-5752 or 907-550-8433 or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Before the break, we were just talking about this identity and culture, right? It's family, it's strong, close relationships between people, but also it's hard work. You know, it's intense, it's competition. You know, that has attracted many players, but also many fans to UAA women's basketball. But not only that, those are some of the many factors that has contributed to their sustained success over the years. And, you know, there's many of them. I cannot list them all for you because we will run out of time. But I do want to highlight some of them. They are now the Great Northwest Athletic Conference champions, 6 years running, going for their seventh straight here this year. They've also qualified to many Sweet 16s. They've played in the national championship game. They've broken hearts. I remember watching the game a couple of years ago against Azusa Pacific. And I'm sorry if I'm bringing you all bad memories right now. But that broke my heart and my kid's heart with that buzzer beater. But, you know, UAA, though. You know, UAA, I think, has women's basketball has given us a lot more to cheer for and celebrate, a lot more than, you know, heartbreaks. They've posted many victories, many wins over NCAA Division I teams. And actually, they have the most wins by a women's Division II team over Division I teams ever, in case you didn't know that. See, that's huge. They've also won at least 11 games over nationally ranked Division II teams. And so you know, there's a super high level of success here. When we talk about elite, when we talk about high level of success, you know, we mean high level of success. And so I guess my first question, I want to ask Coach McCarthy here. So what does this do for you in terms of your national recruiting presence? You know, this sustained level of success that you've had. Does it make it easier? Does it make it kind of harder because now there's like higher standard and expectations or what?
I think it helps us in terms of it casts a bigger net for us. You know, a lot of the time at even Division I levels, yep, at like a low major level, you're recruiting regionally. So, you know, you're recruiting in your part of the United States. And I think that our success on a national scale has helped us to be able to get into, you know, Florida and Texas and, you know, Minneapolis and those types of places, where before we were a little bit more regional. I think that in women's basketball, it's still pretty tough to convince a student athlete to come to Alaska to compete in collegiate athletics, and to, you know, more importantly, go to school. Mm-hmm. Just because I think Alaska has a stigma that there's polar bears outside, and we, you know, take dog sleds to school, and you know, those types of things that you see on TV. Because I think we're, you know, these reality shows that have to do with Alaska, mm-hmm, don't fairly represent Anchorage. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's still a little bit tough from a recruiting standpoint. But I think the more they get to know, and if, you know, because that net is a little bit bigger, we can get in more young people's ears just about what we're about, what Anchorage is about. You know, being able to represent a state, you know, at this level, mm-hmm, it's really unique. And then also being in a place where women's basketball is really so popular as compared to the rest of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to go to the players real quick here. Go to Tanae and then Lauren. So this you know, you get to play Division I teams, Division I talent quite regularly. But not only do you get to play them, I mean, you know, you have like the confidence that you can compete with them and that you can even beat them, and because you have. You know, the program has beaten them several times now. So what does that feel like for you all, you know, to know that, you know, you can compete, you know, with, at the highest level? Tanae, start with you.
It gives you a lot of confidence, like you say, you know, just being a kid from Anchorage and then being a part of, you know, the team that won the shootout and, mm-hmm, you know, playing against Duke, big schools like that, and seeing, you know, the potential that we have. I think it really gives us confidence, especially early in the season, mm-hmm, looking into the postseason, you know, that when we're playing at our full potential and we play together and trust our system and our coaches, you know, we can really accomplish anything. So,
mm-hmm, yeah, thank you. Lauren, was that something that attracted you to UAA too, you know, the opportunities to play D1 team sometimes?
At the time during recruitment, I really didn't think much about it. But once I got here, my first year here, we played Duke kind of early in the season. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, this is so cool, like, be able to play in the Duke arena. Mm-hmm. But I definitely didn't think about that during recruiting, but that's definitely a cool part about playing for UAA. And just like echoing what Tanae said, like, it just gives you a bunch of confidence in the beginning of the season when you play these D1 competitions. You know, mm-hmm, typically D1 teams are a bit taller, a bit more athletic, mm-hmm, pace is a bit faster. So then when you know, you play back into your conference, it's kind of like, wow, like, you know, we kind of play that level a bit higher than this. Like, it makes it definitely gives you more confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also, you know, going back to what Coach said earlier, and it was, you know, my question I asked about national recruiting presence and, you know, how the program success over the years helps with that. You know, I also want to add that UAA has also done a very good job of finding high quality local talent too. I mean, Tanae is an example of that, right? But there's many. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, really good basketball players here in Alaska, and not just in Anchorage or not just in Fairbanks, you know, but even the smaller towns, even rural Alaska. So, Coach, you want to say a little bit about your like, how many eyes do you have all over Alaska, Coach?
I have pretty good relationships with a lot of coaches, high school coaches here in Alaska. You know, we do basketball camps in the summertime, and that's a really good way for us to get to know the local coaches and the local players, you know, as they come into Anchorage and come onto campus for our team camps that we host, that we did before COVID anyways. And mm-hmm, that was really good. And we've had players, you know, we had a really good player that helped us get to the national championship game from Galena in Jenna Buchanan. And then this year we had the former 1A state player of the year from King Cove and Elena Mack. And so,
oh, yeah.
You know, we've I think Alaska, it's really difficult to recruit this state because, you know, there's so many good players off the road system, and it's so spread out. And then the fact that, you know, there's only 2.5 of us on staff. You know, I say half because one, she gets paid part-time, but she works full-time. and a lot of the times our practice time is around the ladies' class schedule. So we'll miss certain practices locally or games locally just because we just don't have the numbers to be able to get out and see as many games as we want. But we do our best to recruit our backyard first.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. So now I want to kind of pivot back to, you know, to the Division One conversation that we were alluding to earlier. Coach, what do you think? I mean, you know, we have good talent, really good talent. Now you can attract high-level talent nationally. You can find high-level talent locally. We have the facilities. All of you, you know, touched on how awesome our facilities are here on campus. Our facility actually is, you know, in the same level, if not better than many Division I facilities. And so the question is, Coach, can we compete? Are we ready for Division I?
Yeah, I mean, I think that from a student athlete standpoint, absolutely. There's certain conferences that, you know, we wouldn't be ready for at this point, but there's leagues that we could absolutely compete in with our current roster at the Division I level. I think that it's more of a commitment that the university would have to make behind athletics in general. We'd have to add sports to be Division I. We'd have to find a conference that would take us. But, you know, there's a lot of those pieces, like you said, that would be in place to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just that commitment piece that, you know, the UA system has gone back and forth anytime that there's been adversity with regards to budget. Mm-hmm. Athletics kind of gets thrown out to take a couple arrows before everyone else. So I think that we'd have to kind of walk down that line first and kind of, you know, map out a game plan if that was the vision of the school. But, you know, we're happy with where we're at. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the underdog status that we have, but if there ever was a vision to go Division I, I think, you know, like you said, there's a lot of pieces in place for us to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really think that, you know, as Alaskans, right, we love the perpetual underdog story. And, you know, if we go Division I, you know, even mid-major Division One, I think Alaska can definitely get behind this team and cheer on this team every time March comes around, you know, looking for that, you know, huge upset come tournament time. But yeah, so I think it's exciting. For me as a basketball fan anyways, it's exciting. So we have an email here from a listener. And so I'm going to share the question to each of you and give you, you know, just a few minutes, maybe a few seconds to answer it. But the listener is asking, what was the most unexpected thing that happened on the court? For all three of you, who wants to answer that first?
Oh, man.
There are probably many unexpected things. What about funny things? Let's add a component to that. Unexpected funny things that happened on the court.
Man, on the court, I don't know necessarily. I mean, it was funny to us. We were at Utah, and before the game, the coaching staff had come up to us and said that they were recruiting Ruthie Hebert, who is from Fairbanks and now plays for the Chicago Sky in the WNBA, and said that she was watching the game so that she could see the difference between the Pac-12 and Division II. And we ended up winning, and which was completely unexpected. Mm-hmm. And we won, and our players stormed the court like they had won the national championship. And their coach, as we went down the line, yelled at our players and said to act like we had been there before. And I told him we hadn't.
That is a big win. That's a Pac-12 team.
Yeah. I mean, their women's basketball budget was probably more than our athletic department.
the entire athletics department. That's great. That's great. What about Tanae? Do you have any stories that you can share?
They'd probably just come from watching back game film. You know, we always watch our games back, and there's usually a few instances where someone takes a funny fall, or, you know, we're always yelling at each other to sprint around. And I know one time our teammate Sala, she literally pushed one of our guards like to the spot she needed to be at. And if you know Sala, she's pretty strong, so our guard just went flying. And, you know, in the game it's not too funny because the coaches are usually yelling at us to get back up, but once we watch it back on film, we all have a good laugh about it. So
great. What about you, Lauren? Any funny unexpected memories on the court?
I cannot think of one off the top of my head, but the game we just played against Fairbanks, the floor was so slippery. And I just remember Nick, like, she went to go close out, Nicole Pickney from Alaska. She just, like, fell, like, straight, like, face planted. I'm like, oh, my goodness. She was okay, but I'm like, jeez.
Well, based on what I heard about how hard you all go at practice, I mean, that's probably a common experience too, though, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, Coach, I want to go back to you here. We have about less than a minute left, but do you have any parting thoughts or parting words or maybe some teasers that you want to share with our listeners today?
Well, first, you know, thank you just so much for having us on. We really take pride in our state, and you know, this is a great platform for us to share our stories. But, yeah, you know, speaking of the Division One deal, I can't say exactly what it is, but there will be some local Alaskans that compete at the Division I level that we will get a chance to compete against next year, and that announcement should be coming sometime in March, I believe.
Wow. That's
around Thanksgiving time, if that is a better hint.
You keep giving us clues and hints. So it's going to happen around Thanksgiving time, but the announcement will be coming in about a month or so.
Right.
Great. That's definitely exciting. But we are now just about out of time. There's definitely so much excitement going on with UAA women's basketball and with Alaskan basketball more generally. This women's basketball team has demonstrated that they are elite by their sustained high-level success. So I hope you come out and show your support for the UAA women's basketball team in the coming weeks as they prepare for tournament time. But for now, we have to say goodbye. So salamat. Thanks for joining us today in Hometown Alaska. Thanks to our guests, Coach Ryan McCarthy and Tanae Voliva, and Lauren Johnson for sharing your thoughts and experiences. Our audio engineer today was Tobin Shelby, and I'm EJ David. Salamat for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.